Thank you very much. Good evening. I'd like to call to order the City Council meeting of March 7, 2017. Councilmember Marchione is on the speakerphone at this time and wishes to participate in this evening's meeting in accordance with Section 3.24 of our policies and procedures related to remote attendance. Under our policies, council members constituting a majority, including those not physically present, may approve Councilmember Marchione's remote attendance by speakerphone. Is there a motion to approve the remote attendance of Councilmember Marchione?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. It's moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Pascal to approve the remote attendance of Councilmember Marchione. Is there any discussion? Under our rules, all votes conducted with a council member attending remotely must be by roll call. Ms. Sherry, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallace?
Yes. And can you count? Yes, I think you'd have to call on Councilmember Marchione as well.
And Councilmember Marchione?
I'll say yes, but I can't hear her at all.
That's okay. No.
Okay, we gotcha. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. So I think now I don't have to do the Councilmember Asher part now, do I?
Mayor, he's not on the line now, but will be for executive session. So if you could see if there's a motion to allow his remote attendance at the executive session, that would be in order.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So, Madam Mayor, I move that we allow his attendance by phone for the executive session.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Councilmember Asher's attendance at the executive session this evening by speakerphone. Again, we will need a roll call vote, please. Sherry.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
And Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The motion is approved. So we are going to go around the table and identify. I'm glad we got through that. well identify ourselves for the record, please, before we start our study session. Sir?
Jay Arnold.
John Pascal. Kirk Triplett.
Lynn Swagstra.
Toby Nixon.
Penny Sweet.
And Amy Wallen. Thank you very much. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. Members of the Council. So tonight's study session is about our Parks Department, and this is always a fun department to talk about because it's probably the single biggest way in which we encounter our public. We have tens of thousands of people who use our system every year. You're going to hear more about that. The park system is something that people can't get enough of. They always want more of it, and we never quite have the resources to quite meet their expectations. So. We have an amazing, talented staff you're going to hear about who do everything they can to provide amazing customer service. But when our previous parks director retired and I was looking for a replacement, one of my big priorities was to bring in somebody who could really take a fresh look at the parks department, bring in new ways and new ideas, and also help us implement systems as we kind of evolve parks into the greater city following annexation. So Lynn has not quite been here a year, and so it was a big task to take on. And I think there's enough really positive and exciting things that are happening, while there's also some challenges facing the department, that we wanted to have some time in the study session to really kind of walk you through some of the changes that she's been proposing and really have a dialogue with the council about, you know, things that you see and opportunities to share us your advice with us and insights. So that's the hope of tonight's study session, is just to give you an overview of where Parks is and where it's going with our new Parks Director. So with that, take it away, Lynn.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I know it's really a privilege to be able to sit at the table for an hour with you and be able to talk about parks and community services, so I do really appreciate the opportunity. I do have a phone-a-friend system in place over here. I'd like to introduce Michael Kogel, our deputy director, Linda Murphy, our recreation manager, and Jason Filan, our parks operations manager. They have tremendous institutional knowledge in the Parks and Community Services Department. So when we have it, if there's any detailed questions on anything or some historical perspective, they may be able to help answer some of those questions. So since we submitted the memo for the council packet, this presentation has ended up morphing into something a little bit bigger than what we initially intended, and I do appreciate that opportunity. So tonight we're not going to just focus on a couple of the updates with the department, but also provide you with a big picture overview, kind of give a highlight of our CIP program. First of all, we're going to start out with a department analysis, then do the overview of the department. Then we'll kind of go into that CIP overview and highlights. And then we get into some of the original topics that we had planned on discussing with the organizational changes and the 2017-18 work plan. So starting out with the organizational analysis, as Kurt mentioned, I've been on board for 9 months now, and when I first came on board, some of the first priorities was to look at how Kirkland does business, so specifically what are our policies, our procedures, our municipal codes, you know, the systems, how we do business, and learning that for the city, learning that for the Parks and Community Services Department. But then also evaluating the top needs for the department, and started with, well, what are the city's priorities for Parks and Community Services? What's in the council work plan? What's in the park board work plan? And what does the community see as the top priorities for our department? So I took a look at all of that information. One of the things I did also was conduct a mini SWOT analysis, so looking at our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And the reason I called a mini SWOT analysis is it wasn't really a public process. It wasn't engaging the whole department to come up with that. It was really just information and discussion with the management team, whereas normally I would kind of do that a little bit more publicly to have an official SWOT analysis. And so after looking at all that information, I kind of said, okay, well, what's the priorities? The priorities have to be safety and risk management, promises and obligations. So those are things like the levy projects. What did we promise the community with the levy? Where are we at with that? Where do we still need to go with that? Looking at some of our contracts and partnerships. So, you know, again, those promises and obligations. Also, initiatives underway. So what was in progress that needed to be delivered. The Lucity software implementation and the Rec 1 software. At the time, it was just recreation software implementation. It's now Rec 1. And you're actually going to see that tonight, the Rec 1 software. The CIP and the budget, those are all promises and obligations, so making sure that those are priorities. And then we had some circumstances like position vacancies right out of the gate. I think it was the first week I came on board, the AFSCME contract was signed, and correspondingly a few days later we had some retirement announcements. So looking at the mini SWOT analysis, starting out with our weaknesses and threats, this is my one slide of the evening where I get to paint a grim picture. You get a little glimpse inside my head as to what keeps me awake at night. This is it right here on the slide. So, you know, understanding that we have a significant increase in the CIP projects, the park acquisitions, the construction projects. The construction boom and many other factors with the economy are driving up all of the costs that we incur with materials and supplies. Our service levels across the department, and looking at each area, is anywhere from 105% to 270% above pre-annexation levels, and that is with a flat budget and flat staffing. The community demand for our services far exceeds what we are really able to provide. We have significant operating inefficiencies, and there's a variety of reasons for that. Antiquated technology, we were using paper and pencil systems across the department. Undersized maintenance center, years of work backlog. There are promised projects from years and years ago that we have not delivered. And then some personnel challenges. We had some risk management and liability issues. Some of those have been addressed already. We have minimal policies and procedures in place. One of the biggest threats to our department is actually the increasing minimum wage. It's not something that actually impacts the entire city, but when you look at our couple hundred contingent staff, this, by the time it's done, the state mandated minimum wage increase, by the time it's done in a couple years, this will affect our department to the tune of the low hundred thousands to the mid hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's a pretty big deal. aging facilities, accessibility issues, and we're pretty much capped out for programs that we can offer with the facilities that we have. So those are some big challenges.
Question for you, Mr. Pascal.
On your bullet about the service levels, could you explain what you mean by that a little bit more? Is mm-hmm. that we're having recreational services increase in enrollments, or what are you talking there?
Yeah, so for recreation, looking at pre-annexation levels, we offer 24,000 hours of recreation programs a year. Since that time, we've actually eliminated several staff positions, but we now offer over 25,000 hours of recreation programs a year. So fewer staff, more hours. That's the 105% increase. That's the lowest one, and partially because we've reduced so many staff in the recreation division. The Green Kirkland is the highest percentage increase. That is a new program since annexation, so it's not terribly surprising that that would be the 270%. So the number of acres in restoration, the number of acres of parks that we oversee, the number of grants awarded with human services, those types of things for the service levels.
Another question for you.
So when that happens, we pay for it, but we do it with seasonals or?
Well, generally speaking, we often reprioritize. And so when I talk about years of backlog, we have a lot of things that we simply haven't done. We end up pushing project off year after year, things like that. So there you go. That was the difficult slide. From here on out, we get to be in a more positive, proactive frame of mind. So thinking about the strengths is obviously some of the things that I keep in my eye on to make sure that I don't get discouraged. So we do have an amazing variety of recreation programs, and you're going to see more about that. The community interest in what we do is unbelievable. Folks really participate in our parks and recreation programs. I mean, they love these services in this community, and that's a great thing to be part of. We do have new technology systems that are going into place, and those are going to help modernize the department. They're going to help us create some efficiencies, and they also provide a really good platform for future growth. We have some new equipment that is also going to increase our capability. And honestly, one of our best resources is our staff. And I just can't say enough about the three folks sitting over here. I mentioned their institutional knowledge, but also their work ethic is just unbelievable. The number of hours that these folks put in, the efforts to make sure we're delivering the mission every day is phenomenal. And I'm very grateful for that. So kind of moving into a department overview, I'm going to take it by functional area. So the first one is park maintenance and operations. When we talk about park operations, most folks certainly think about our neighborhood parks, our community parks. Folks also think about the waterfront parks for sure. And we have tremendous acres of natural parks as well. But some of the things that folks don't always think about is all of the beaches that we operate, the shoreline and the docks. So maintenance of the shoreline and the docks is a huge undertaking. Many of those shorelines are armored. Some are not. Some have docks. And so we have to maintain and inspect all of those. The marina, so the boat launch and mooring operations, cemetery. The trails, so the trails are kind of split in the city, so any trail that's connected to a park or within a park is under our jurisdiction. We have a pavilion, 6 picnic shelters, 6 picnic areas, and then we go into the playgrounds, so 26 playgrounds, and playgrounds require ongoing inspection and maintenance. There's 15 public restrooms, Heritage Hall, Forbes House, and 4 rental houses. The PPATCH program has 88 plots in it. And then, of course, we administer 59 ball fields and maintain 28 ball fields. On each of these overview slides, I was also going to present some 2016 numbers. So this is a full year worth of numbers. Currently overseeing 634 acres of parks. There were over 6,800 boat moorages. You can see the number of boat launches, commercial dockings, 53 cemetery services last year. This is a pretty substantial number, over 24,000 hours of ball field use. that's a lot of ball field use, all with 28.5 benefited staff. And then in the summer, we add an additional 15 to 25 seasonal staff. And the number is dependent. So it's a dollar figure that we have, not a number of people. So depending on retention and things like that, when salaries go up, that actually reduces the number of people that we're able to hire. So each year it does fluctuate a little bit.
These numbers are stunning. They should be on our website. I mean, we should really try to promote.
Well, some of these are in our park levy accountability report that we do every year, and so we try to do a nice version of this, but we can emphasize this better as well.
It's a huge body of work. Yes, sir.
Oh, just a question on the seasonal staff, that 15 to 25. Is that includes lifeguards?
No, I'm going to show you that one next. Question. Excellent segue. So under the Recreation Services Division, as you know, we operate the Peter Kirk Community Center, the Peter Kirk Pool, the North Kirkland Community Center. We do have three lifeguarded beaches in the summers, oversee the K-Tub and KPC contracts, and the new Customer Service Center at City Hall. And then for recreation programs, we're currently offering 25,000 hours of recreation programs a year. And you can see the different types of programs that we offer. We are quite heavy in tot and youth programming as well as aquatics. We do provide a lot of senior services at Peter Kirk Community Center. But when you look at our programming, a lot of youth programming. So a couple of the numbers, John, you were mentioning lifeguards. So under the Recreation Services Department, we have anywhere from 150 to 300 contingent and seasonal staff. So in the summer season, we do add 85 lifeguards. So that number varies by the season. So in the summer, we're ramping up to the 300. So that's the 85 lifeguards and 15 cashiers to operate on the beaches and Peter Kirk Pool. During the rest of the year, the contingent staff are folks like program instructors, facility attendants, those types of staff members. We also have, again, anywhere from 50 to 100. Today, as we speak right now, we have 62 contracted recreation service providers. Those are folks like the paddleboard operation who does paddleboard programs, some of our youth programs like Wiggle, Clap, and Sing, and I can't do that without wiggling, Wiggle, Clap, and Sing. A couple of those programs are actually offered by contractors. So 19,000 registered participants in 2016, and that's actually a pretty low number. A lot of those programs are parent-child programs. We register the child, but the parent also participates. Over 1,900 participants last year were on our wait list and turned away from recreation programs. The lifeguards oversaw almost 17,000 swimmers. That's in the water. They actually distinguish between people in the water and people on the beach. So on the beaches during hours of operation only was 68,000, almost 69,000 people last year. Fortunately for us, we only had to rescue 12 people, so that's good. Eight benefited staff. That is 2016 number. 2017 number is changing because of some reorganization and the added program assistant position that was the service package submitted. The Community and Human Services Department, I kind of collectively call it Community Services. To me, it seems like the overarching title of all of that. Right now, it's the Human Services Advisory Board, but as you know, that's changing to the Commission. Leslie is a representative on local and regional committees and task forces, and I was looking through the list of task forces that she maintains contact with, and by my count, it was 16 local and regional committees. Youth Services, that does consist of the Youth Council as well as all of the different programs that the Youth Council operates. That one in particular is quite labor intensive because we're dealing with youth, so Reggie has to personally be at every single meeting, every single event. The Senior Council is a little bit more self-sufficient, but certainly they expect a great deal of staff support for their meetings and their programs and initiatives. And we have the Community Services, which mostly consists of special events. So there's the community events, the special events, expressive events, those types of things. In 2016, we had 93 event days with over 155,000 participants. And you can see some of the human services numbers. Last year, we awarded $872,000 in grants. There are 40 youth sitting on the council. You can see the number of cases they hear in the traffic court. They do host numerous service projects each year, a couple special events that they operate as well.
Question for you, Lynn.
Yeah.
Mr. Arnold.
Can you talk a little bit about what's the difference between special events and event days?
Some events are multiple days.
Okay.
Like Oktoberfest is to a Saturday and a Sunday. So instead of that being one of, well, we do count it as one event, yeah. But it's over multiple days.
Got it. Thank you.
The Green Curriculum Partnership is the newest component of the department. 81 acres were in active restoration for 2016. That mostly consists of the steward program. So we run kind of forest restoration and rehabilitation through the steward program, but we do also offer or coordinate other events on top of the steward system. So last year we had 2,300 volunteers who contributed over 10,000 hours of service to essentially rehabilitate our forests. 253 events. A lot of those events are planned and implemented by volunteers, not all of them, but even if the volunteers are implementing the event, every single event is supported by staff. And every event does require city resources and assistance and that kind of thing. That averages out to over 21 events a month. And they did some pretty good work last year, a lot of plantings. The administration, planning, and development aspect of the department is probably the hardest thing to really kind of showcase and quantify. I mean, how do you really define administration? I think a lot of folks really know that, but obviously that includes council and council committee interface, park board, policy, service levels. We deal with the budget management. We provide the strategic leadership of the department, but also the tactical leadership for the department. Public relations, property acquisition, CIP, the long-range planning, benefited staff performance. There is no supervisor or manager over community and human services, so Michael and I directly oversee that, and of course administration for the whole department. And I will say that payroll is no small feat, because that's all done, all those contingent staff are done with paper and pencil time cards. It's about 4 days a month of full-time staff labor to deal with payroll. So billing, invoicing, all those things.
Which we're trying to address with our new financial system.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
So moving into a little bit of a CIP overview, this is actually the five-year approved CIP, all of the projects on there. Many of the projects have kind of generic titles like park acquisition, and so that can be year after year. It's not just 1 year. Most of these projects are actually 2017 and 2018, and some of them are outstanding projects that were approved in previous years, so you don't actually see them listed in the 2017 CIP. We only show what's approved and funded for those years versus listing previous year projects again. So those are the ones that, again, are approved. So for 2017-18, the approved CIP is $6.8 million. And then the five-year CIP is $19.8
million. Lynn, can you explain one more time? So there are things on this list that we're working on now that are not, that are on last year's list.
Correct. Like Juanita Beach Bathhouse was a 2016 project that hasn't actually been constructed yet. So it was funded in the 15-16 budget, but is actually going to be constructed and managed this year.
So are its numbers in there or just its name?
Just the names.
Okay.
Yeah, so yeah, correct. The numbers are not in there. Just a highlight of a couple of the really big projects. The Totem Lake Master Plan and implementation is one of our biggest projects that we're going to be embarking upon. It's pretty exciting, as you know. The Yuppie Pawn Shop site is what you see there, letter C, the upland parcel. and then the boardwalk trail connector to the CKC. Those are phase one.
Also should note that parcel J, the King County parcel, is actually on the council agenda for action tonight to acquire that parcel.
The Forbes Lake Master Plan, that was a 15-16 project that would be going into construction in 17, and that consists of an accessible trail to the lake and a viewing platform at the lake, the parking area, and then a sidewalk along 124th. The Edith Moulton Master Plan, this is another really large project. Again, Michael, funded in 15-16, correct? Yes, funded in 15-16, but going into construction either later this year or early next year. And that'll be, this is a big project, that the children's play feature, the picnic shelter, restroom, accessible trails and bridge, and then an off-leash dog trail. The Juanita Beach Master Plan, again, a 15-16 project, the new bathhouse, the picnic shelter, and then some general restoration of the site. Okay, so those are some overview slides, and now we're kind of moving into what we were originally going to be chatting about this evening, and that's some staffing overviews and just a highlight of the changes that we've made. So we're going to give you a little bit of the staffing history over the past couple years and kind of explain why some of these organizational changes. We're going to show you the 2016 org chart as well as the working 2017 org chart. I call it a working org chart because it is still a work in progress. It's not necessarily a done deal. And then you also have a handout of the 2017 org chart. So taking a look at our staffing history, this is just the benefited FTEs. This does not include the contingent or seasonal staff, and those numbers obviously change the picture quite a bit. So with benefited FTEs, one of the things that we often look at is the bottom line FTE for the department. So in 2009, we had 45 FTEs. In 2016, it was 46 FTEs. Technically, that's an increase of one FTE. That doesn't really convey the whole picture, though. When you kind of look at where are those FTEs, where were they cut, where were they restored? So they were cut across the department. You can see five positions were cut in roughly 2010-2011, and then some were restored through the 2012 park levy. Parks maintenance is up 3.5 positions, and then Green Kirkland partnership is a whole new program added with 3.5 positions, whereas in administration, community services, and human services are all down in FTEs from pre-annexation levels. That helps set the stage a little bit for understanding why we might have seen some of what we are seeing with organizational chart anomalies. So when you have all of these different positions cut in different places and we're piecing together FTEs and then FTEs were restored, kind of made a bit of a convoluted org chart. Also, there were some span of control issues in the recreation division specifically. So in the recreation division, it was a completely flat organizational chart. There was the supervisory tier was completely eliminated, so all 300 plus employees over five locations were reporting to a manager who was in a sixth location, so no on-site supervision of any kind. We had some circumstances, as I mentioned, retirements, new technology changes the picture with what we really need to go forward, and then again that evolution. When you looked at our 2016 org chart, it was completely horizontal, so all the way across the department, flat organizational chart. What that means is there's no depth. So if one person is out, that's the only person who performs a specific function. So if they're out, customer service stops. That's one of the things we're hoping to address. We had some issues with title use, equity, things like that. That's the 2016 org chart. It's kind of hard to see the flatness of it because it simply can't be presented in a PowerPoint slide. But if you look under recreation management, all of those positions would actually be flat across the line. Same under Michael Kogel, same under Green Kirkland, although obviously the Green Kirkland position is a supervisory position. So goals for, we want to be very purposeful. If you're going to make organizational chart changes, position changes, you want to have specific objectives in mind. So we defined those objectives, and then when we looked at different options and possibilities, each one we measured against the objectives and decided, is this going to meet the objective or does it not? And so we actually went through multiple iterations and ultimately decided on what we have here at the moment. So our objectives were to address the risk management issues, those circumstances, and the organizational chart anomalies that we discussed. We wanted to provide for improved customer service, help kind of reset the culture a little bit, find efficiencies to better adjust to our current staffing levels. So how do we operate more efficiently and effectively, and hopefully set up a structure that will allow for future growth and optimize what we have. So the 2017 organizational chart, you can see under the recreation line in particularly, we restored the recreation supervisor position. So we now have a supervisor on site at Peter Kirk, at North Kirkland, and then a supervisor over the customer service hub. We've kind of combined areas, so we now set up for more cross-training. Long story short, what we've been able to achieve with this organizational chart is improved parity and symmetry across the department. We have better position equity. We have actually set ourselves up for a little bit of upward mobility and succession planning, and that's through that cross training and whatnot. We now are able to serve the customers from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, which is really nice, and the three folks operating that hub cross train, and so if you call the customer service hub, you should get an answer.
Just a quick note. So two of the positions on there were ones the council gave us through the budget process, which we really appreciate. And then it's also important to note that some of these other positions were created through reclassifications, and we actually worked really closely with AFSCME to achieve those. So we want to make sure they get credit because there was a lot of complex working here with the union, and they were always willing to engage and help us try to find solutions.
Indeed. Okay, so moving into the work plan section of the evening, I have to tell you, these slides are really text intensive. It's really hard to present the work plan, which is a lot of words, with, you know, excitement and enthusiasm and pictures. So a lot of text. I'm going to try not to read all of the text to you. And in addition to just showcasing the work plan, I tried to make it a little bit of a status update as well. So items in blue are items that are actively being worked on right now. Items in black are coming at a later date. And there's actually even some check marks up there. Kind of excited about that. So as we set the work plan, you know, I kind of mentioned earlier about the prioritization. So, you know, council work plan, city priorities, park board priorities, the PROS plan, and any of those current projects and promises, those all had to be prioritized along with kind of some of those items in the mini SWOT analysis. So, you know, typically I would present a work plan kind of as it's laid out in the PROS plan, but honestly that would have made this into 20 slides. So presenting it by functional area was actually a better way to consolidate it. So it's hard to tell, but these are all in blue. These are all currently being actively worked on.
About that one. You can see.
Yep, you can see on that one. So the Lucidity project, the REC one, and the website. And alas, could I trouble you, Jason, to click on the REC one? Because I didn't bring the mouse over here. So here you get to see the REC one website, I hope. There you go. This is actually live on the City of Kirkland's webpage right now under Recreation. So I have to give a shout out to the IT department because they were an integral part of the REC One implementation. I want to say thank you to them. While this is live, our biggest milestone is actually going to be on March 16th when 1,278 programs, you can see in that All Activities tab, 1,278 programs click over and go into registration mode. We will literally have hundreds of people sitting by their computers waiting for that to happen, and some of our programs will fill immediately. So that's the layout of REC 1, and so each one of those is a little tab, and so like where you see Peter Kirk Pool, 584, that means there's 584 programs that you can register for at Peter Kirk Pool. Preschool activities, 94. So you can sort, if I scroll down into that site, right now I'm clicked on all activities, so 1,278 programs. That is going to be a lot of scrolling. Customers don't want to do that. So it's just going to keep going and going and going for about 5 hours. So you can click on any one of those tabs, and it's going to obviously give you just those sets of programs. You can see up there, there's a tab for rental picnic areas. So this is where you can go in and actually click and rent a picnic area. And what we're trying to do is deliver the easier rentals through the easy online interface. But if you have a complex rental where you want a picnic shelter and a big part of the park, that's much more difficult to do through the online interface. So those are the types of things that then staff will deal with in person. Could you go there? Thank you, Jason.
So, Lynn, mm-hmm. when you go live, this is going to be every parent waiting to sign their kids up for swimming
yes.
classes.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So it's all hands on deck. One of the last slides is actually all hands on deck. Rec 1 rollout. So every one of the recreation staff will be essentially by the phones waiting to help people. So the next functional area is property acquisition, CIP, and planning. You've already seen the majority of these items because those are on the CIP project list. However, some of these are not actually CIP projects, so there's several things up there that you haven't already seen in a previous slide. So there's multiple grant opportunities that we're pursuing, and those go with CIP projects. So the youth athletic field, the conservation futures, those types of grants we're actively working on. The city school partnership is a pretty big one. We're about to launch into the public process of that one to help decide what that project is going to be for the upcoming 2 years. Off-leash dog areas, that's going to be a big one. In fact, we're going to talk about K-Dog in just a moment. Park and park facility improvements, again, the ones in blue are the ones that we're actively working on right now. Do have a couple check marks up on that one as well. You saw some of these in the service package submissions during the budget process. So the marina moorage rate increase was the funding mechanism to replace the two moorage pay stations and to add the third pay station at the boat launch. So now customers will be able to walk right up to the boat launch and pay on the spot for their launch. The webcam at the marina, there's some heritage hall repairs. Pool resurfacing, we're struggling with that one. Last year it went out to bid, the bids came in over, we rejected them. We went out again this spring, the bids came over and we rejected them. We're gonna go back out in the fall when we think, instead of springtime, when we think we'll get a more competitive bid. Some of the ones at kind of the end there with all of the SOPs and policies and whatnot, those are all for 2018. We have a lot of work to do when it comes to kind of documenting our policies and procedures and service levels. Under recreation, we've got a couple check marks there. So the customer service hub is operational. We have completed some reorganization. You're pretty aware of the athletic field fee restructuring. Yes. There's a couple up there that are in discussion as we speak about what the kind of the right direction is to go, and that's realigning youth and senior services with the Peter Kirk Community Center. That was really kind of moving the staff to that location, not necessarily making any substantial changes to the programs, but we are taking a look at that one. National Background Check Program is impactful for the recreation folks. The Green Kirkland Partnership, big priority is to hire the vacant coordinator position. That's actually been vacant for a little over 5 months now. We hope to have an offer out this week, so excited about that. And when that new coordinator comes on board, one of their top priorities is going to be looking into possible revenue generation to help sustain the program. Right now, the program is operating solely on the 2012 levy and then any grants they're able to obtain. But not too dissimilar to parks and recreation, there are opportunities for sponsorship or programmatic revenue generation, and it's our hope that we can grow the program through that. The two technology projects actually both impact the Green Kirkland Partnership, and correspondingly, they're going to have to revise some of their policies, procedures, their website, all of that to adjust to the two technology platforms that will be in place. Human Services is the Human Services Commission. One of the top priorities right now is the community conversation, as you know, the Eastside Shelter. And administration, lots of items there, a couple we've completed. Still working on kind of getting settled into City Hall. A couple long-term projects with the HR classification study. One of the ones I wanted to mention is measures of success. So in the department overview, you saw a ton of numbers. Traditionally, I don't think have been very good at presenting to you measures of success. So what's really, this is a work plan item that we'll get into later, but what really is a meaningful measurement that helps the community show how we're serving them? And you know, so we'd like to make some adjustments to that and be much more transparent into the service levels.
I think Councilmember Asher will be very excited to hear this.
Nice. And then it's all hands on deck right now. And so, you know, this is a really big work plan. There are a lot of items on there. And so one of the things that we're trying to do with staff is just keep that prioritization on the forefront. So right now it's all hands on deck with Rec 1. So we go live next week. Folks all need to be ready. We're kind of pooling and concentrating our efforts to help make that happen. Property acquisitions in progress, a couple high-priority projects, the Houghton Dock decking replacement, the pay stations, marina repairs. Park staff are working like crazy to open parks. This was kind of a tough winter, really tough winter. So there's a lot of park cleanup to be done. And honestly, there was a lot of opportunity to serve with de-icing and snow removal as well. And so park staff are pulled off their daily duties in order to lend assistance with that. So we're trying to open restrooms and really get those fields in tip-top shape. Ball field season has actually started, believe it or not. And they are currently in the process of hiring some of those summer seasonals. The community conversation and the disbanding of K-Dog. So we got notice round about the holiday time period that K-Dog is going to be disbanding. And so that's very impactful to the community and to our department. Obviously, we have to chat about how we're going to now oversee Jasper's Dog Park, and that goes in front of Park Board tomorrow night. And so we will probably be coming to council in April on that item.
Maybe say a little bit about what they said is the reason why.
The primary reason why they fulfilled their 5-year agreement, and they've done an exceptional job of maintaining and operating Jasper's Park. Really exceptional job. The primary reason being is it's very difficult for them to marshal the volunteers necessary to keep up with the park. So you know, and it's not really the most exciting job to go out there and clean up dog poo and tell people to control their dogs and, you know, rake mulch chips and empty trash. They've done a yeoman's job, but yeah, it's just too difficult for them to keep the volunteers there and maintaining the park. So there you go. So question and discussion.
I'm exhausted.
Questions or comments for Lynn or her team?
I just want to say, but Lynn, I think that's an amazing analysis of an incredible department. It feels like you've got your arms around it now.
Getting there. It's still a little ways to go. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We're really excited about the online registration and how much work has gone on that with that launch coming up. Heard throughout your presentation, you're talking a lot about Rec 1, but my suggestion would be, as far as the public is concerned, it's going to be, notice that Kirklandparks.net
Yes. Is
how they get to this. So
true.
I would encourage you, even internally, to be able to start saying, this is Kirklandparks.net, because when someone's on the phone and saying, oh, you can do that on a registration portal, go to Rec 1.
Yeah.
I'm not going to know what Rec 1 is. It's in shifting to this new online thing, it would be an important part of the branding.
Yeah, can do.
Branding
thank
exercise.
You.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. There's Councilmember Haskell.
This is quite the list of things to be working on over the next few years. And, you know, I know that you organize it on several slides. One of the things that I found helpful, and I don't know, you might do this with the Park Board Work Program, but I go back to my days on the Planning Commission, and we would put together a work program that kind of showed how it kind of laid out schedule-wise of each of the major things. And so we're able to see kind of what things were prioritized ahead. I know you try to highlight that with the different text colors and things like that on here, but I don't know if you do something similar, because that would be really helpful for someone like me who's not in the intricate details of where everything's at, but to kind of see how things are we expect to be accomplished over time for each one of those categories.
It's in a Gantt chart version.
Okay.
So we'd be happy to provide that if you'd like to see that.
That'd be really helpful.
Sure.
Because that would also be nice to track over time, like next year. Okay, so how did we do on that from a schedule-wise?
Okay.
What weren't we able to accomplish?
Sure.
Sweet. Mr. Nixon.
I think if you do that, Lynn, I don't know how hard it would be, but it would be nice to see where things have slid. Mm-hmm. So if a project was, we'd hope for it in 16, it'd be nice to see that there was a date, just to get a sense of how it's building.
Right.
Mr. Nixon?
Well, as you know, every now and then we get questions or criticisms, especially over social media, where it's a little less personal. People ask, well, I'm paying all these taxes to the city, what am I getting for my money? And I don't know how anybody could look at this presentation and not be impressed with how much our citizens are getting for their money. I remember when I first saw this list, which we didn't really talk about here, I was very impressed by this list and all the things that are major work plan elements, and asked that this be made available online so that those of us who are interacting with the public would be able to easily give them a URL to it and say, well, go look at that list of all the things that are happening with your park levy dollars, those kind of things. And so I'm curious, maybe at a deeper level, how do we plan to get the word out to people about not only this list, but all the more or less ongoing things that that the department does as well?
Yeah, well, you know, that's another one of those elements we haven't funded in quite a long time, is how do you do the better communication? And so that's something we can certainly talk about, and maybe a place at the city manager's office can also try to help. One possibility might be to expand the accountability report beyond just the levy, and maybe it becomes more of an annual report for the whole Parks Department, and maybe the levy report's a piece of it rather than it just being the whole thing. But yeah, I think that was part of what we wanted today, was tell the whole story, because there's lots of amazing things happening as well as, you know, some challenges.
Yeah.
But I think communicating all of Kirkland's services across all departments is a place we can keep doing better, and we haven't really done as well as we could on that, but a lot of the communication positions over time were eliminated, so we're finding our way back a little bit at a time. And I think the new communications assistant we're about to hire in the city manager's office, that would be also a place to talk about ways we can get this story out better. But we'll follow up with that with a director's discussion. I think that's a good idea.
Thank you.
Mr. Baskin.
Just a couple details. One, you had this handout of the org chart, and I noticed it's different than what was in the PowerPoint, so I didn't know which one is most recent.
That was a test.
Well, the other one's 16, isn't it?
No, there's the 2017. It has the GKP supervisor in a different spot.
It does. Excellent. He was really paying attention. The Green Kirkland Partnership Supervisor currently does report to me. One of the work plan items was to consider integration of the Green Kirkland Partnership into parks. So kind of an interesting component is that Green Kirkland Partnership operates solely within parks. So, you know, Sharon essentially needs to coordinate with Jason. We have a park operations manager. He's responsible for all aspects of parks. So having the Green Kirkland Partnership operating outside of parks and making decisions that relate to the service level of parks It is kind of an interesting conundrum that I find myself struggling with. Also, both entities are funded with the 2012 park levy, so it actually makes economic sense as well as some efficiencies of accounting and whatnot to kind of combine the two. It's not quite as straightforward as that. Some of the business arguments for doing the combination make a lot of sense, but in practice there are some nuances there that I still need to explore. So for the moment, the supervisor is reporting to me, but it is something that we're looking at in the work plan.
And then just the last thing. So the Green Kirkland Partnership, kind of building off of what Councilmember Nixon had said, there's some really amazing statistics about that you have in the presentation about the volunteer hours contributed. In terms of value, that equates to some value, correct?
I do actually have
and
that dollar.
That would be great. So we're funding 3.5 FTEs. That's equating to a value of, you know, a return of this amount. Mm-hmm. That goes along to kind of communicating that. What we're achieving by that. And maybe we've done that.
We do have that, and I regret that I did not bring that number with me. But I can give it, I can send it to you if you'd like to know it, and that is a number that we can include.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just Mr. Nixon? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's good. Go ahead. I was going to say, on the same note, you may have seen Patrick Teft, who's our volunteer coordinator, and summarizes that for all volunteers,
yeah,
and
true.
This is a subset of that, but we should break it out by department, and so I think it's a good idea to show the value of the Green Kirkland Partnership, but I think posted around City Hall, you'll see also the total value. And I think it's about 18.5 FTEs worth of value that we get from the volunteers for Kirkland. So it's an extraordinary amount of help.
Yeah. Mr. Nixon?
And since Mr. Pascal talked about the org chart, there was one thing that came to my mind the first time I saw this, which just came back to mind. Yeah, you may know I was president of a homeowners association that owns a pool, and we had a lot of lifeguards on staff too, 20 some odd, and we always had senior lifeguards who were kind of shift supervisors. This org chart makes it look like it's completely flat, like all 85 lifeguards report to one person, but when it actually comes to day-to-day operations, do you have like one person who is overseeing the whole pool operation for that day?
Technically, Linda was the only supervisory level staff on record for all of those employees.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Right. And so now we do have a supervisor at the Peter Kirk Community Center. Having said that, we do have leads. So
you have shift leads?
Or, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Leads cannot technically supervise, though. So that's a little bit of a technicality. They are still overseeing and providing a lot of that day-to-day kind of oversight.
Like the more experienced guards,
yes,
do that kind of thing. Okay.
And we do have incredible retention with the lifeguards. Incredible.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. a great summer job.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I want to compliment you on your work. I mean, we're problems, right? How do we take care of this incredible system that we have? And I always think about the people who came before us who invested and purchased land and planned. And I mean, I've been lucky to travel in different parts of the world, and we have a park system that is unlike anywhere else. It is clean. It is beautifully maintained. My husband and I go to Marina Park, where you see it's just a magnet for the world. The whole region treats it like its backyard. But there's these hidden gems, and I'm not going to mention where they are, because you can go there and have it to yourself. I mean, even that park on 124th, it is a beautiful place. And my husband, who doesn't really hand out compliments, always says, look at how do they take care of all of this? It's incredible. So I'm feeling really great about you, Lynn, and your team, and I've been very lucky to work with your team on the park levy project, and just on, you know, just customer service issues that come up. And I'll never forget that day I called you and you just helped me, and the customer service emphasis that you've brought is something that's extremely important to me, and I feel like this communication strategy that my colleagues are talking about is so important, because that is part of customer service, right? Letting people know what we're doing, what our work is, showing our work. So I want to congratulate you on the Rec One thing. How cool is that? I really want to go register for a a dance class. I mean it. I have a question about the park levy, and I guess maybe it's a question for Kurt. Did we, first of all, I wonder if we could have a deeper conversation at some point about the levy. I know we do the accountability, yeah. but I'm worried about, the levy has a lot of demands on it.
It does.
And were we not bold enough with the levy? Should we have done more? And I don't know, maybe this is just part of a bigger conversation about future funding, because this department needs our support. Yeah.
Thank you. So it is our intent to first bring to the Public Works and Parks Committee and to the full council a discussion of the levy, because the levy was designed to transition from capital projects to more operating costs over time. But there was never really a schedule or a scale for how fast that transition should happen. It's really going to be a policy and budget decision by the council. The series of decisions we're making, all for very good reasons, are sort of accelerating that transition of how much operating costs we're picking up with the levy. So as we're getting close, 2018 and 19 is when we'll have, we believe, delivered all the projects that we promised in the levy. Then I think there's going to be a really important conversation with the council about, so now what? You know, how much do you want to try to reserve for capital? How much should we start maybe adding services, plus the cost of services will grow. So that will be a conversation for later this year that will start it, and then it will certainly be a huge conversation in the 19-20 budget, what happens with the levy. And I think it's a great community conversation about, and do we need to do more? So, you know, whether that's an aquatic center conversation being returned, whether it's, you know, enhanced services that we can't quite get to, you know, I know there's a hunger out there for people for more service, but that will be a discussion for the council.
Yeah, even among council members, we're always saying, how about a dog park? How about an urban farm? How about, you know, we come up with all these great ideas, and you almost think, oh, please stop. But anyway, thank you so much.
Mayor?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Marcioni.
Could I just make a general comment?
Please.
I just want to say how impressed I am by this whole presentation and the numbers of people that we actually serve. And I like the direction the department's going. And will somebody see that org chart gets in my box?
Oh,
yes,
sure.
Thank you.
On it. Thanks, Doreen.
So just one last update. So Marilyn was kind enough to find the chart that we post by volunteer. So you can see that the 30,000 hours was $875,000 worth of value. And so 10,000 of that, about a third, is the Green Kirkland Partnership. So, you know, roughly a third of 875,000, so a little over $250,000 worth of value from the Green Kirkland Partnership alone, from the volunteers. So that's pretty impressive.
Very impressive. All right, other comments? Okay, we're going to go into an executive session to discuss potential litigation, and we'll return at 7:30. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll call you from the other room.
Thank you, Parks team, for being here.
Mayor, we're live.
Oops. Good evening, and welcome to the City Council meeting. We are back in a session following a study session on our Parks and Community Services Department, and also an executive session to discuss pending litigation. I used the wrong word before. I apologize. It's not potential litigation. It was pending litigation. Mm-hmm. Now, could I ask for the roll for our regular meeting, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Pascal?
Here.
Councilmember Marciani?
Doreen, are you there?
Councilmember Marciani?
Yes, here. Sorry.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is under items. Item number 5, it's honors and proclamation. It's the Kirkland All-Star Girls Softball Team's proclamation. City Manager.
Okay. So thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. So it's very fitting that our study session discussion was our park system, because we have two of our best customers and community treasures in their own right, the Kirkland American Little League and the Kirkland National Little League, are here tonight. So the proclamation is going to do two things. It's going to celebrate their decades of presence here in Kirkland, part of what makes our community so great, and also, more importantly, to celebrate the fact that the all-star team from both of these groups, the Girls 9 and 10, softball all-star champ, were the state champions in 2016. So The proclamation will be read. And then, yeah. So when the proclamation is read, we're actually going to have the girls' softball team come up and join you for brief comments and photo. And there's also members of the boards of both groups here who also might say a few words.
Excellent. Perfect. Well, Councilmember Pascal is going to be joining me to read this proclamation. So we're excited to do so.
Ladies would like to join us, come on up, and then whoever else will receive the proclamation.
Everyone on TV can see.
Right.
Yes, it's on.
Oh, hello.
Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. Councilmember Pascal.
Thank you. So this is congratulating the Kirkland All-Star softball team. Whereas 2017 marks the 60th anniversary of the founding of the Kirkland National Little League and the 66th anniversary of the Kirkland American Little League. And whereas Kirkland National Little League and the Kirkland American Little League, both known as ambassadors of youth baseball and softball, together educate over 1,100 Kirkland boys and girls each year on baseball, softball, sportsmanship, and being strong members of the community. And whereas over the past 60-plus years, Kirkland National Little League and the Kirkland American Little League have positively impacted the lives of tens of thousands of Kirkland boys and girls. And whereas in 1974, the Kirkland National Little League expanded to support softball for girls, and that same year, the Kirkland Softball All-Star Team placed second at the very first Little League Softball World Series in Freeport, New York. And whereas in 1980 and 1982, the Kirkland National All-Star Team qualified for the Little League Baseball World Series, winning the entire series in 1982. And whereas in 1993, the Kirkland National All-Star Team won the Washington State Championships for the third time in 5 years. And whereas in 1999, the Washington State Little League District 9 was awarded host status for the first Little League Junior Softball World Series, which was played on Evers Fields in the city of Kirkland, and the event has been played there ever since its inception. And whereas in 2016, the Kirkland Juniors All-Star Softball Team, comprised of 13 and 14-year-old girls, competed in the Little League's Junior Softball World Series, making it through to the knockout round. And whereas in 2016, the Kirkland 9-10 All-Star Softball Team, comprised of 9 and 10-year-olds, girls became the Washington State Little League champions, and the team went undefeated in both the Little League District 9 and the Little League State Championship tournaments.
Now, therefore, I, Amy Wallen, Mayor of Kirkland, do hereby proclaim the City of Kirkland's pride in these champions in both the Kirkland National Little League and Kirkland American Little League, and wish all the teams the best of luck as they kick off the 2017 season on March 18th, 2017. Congratulations and thank you. A few words from Councilmember Pascal.
Yeah, so just a few words, and then I'd like to give it over to Chris, the manager of the team. So, girls, it's great that you all can be here this evening. It's thrilled that we as a city are able to celebrate your remarkable achievement last year in winning the state title. Speaking on behalf of the council and the city, we are so proud of you for doing that. While this recognition comes several months after bringing home the state title, I hope that you've had time to think back and reflect on what you did, what you accomplished. It was something that doesn't come easily or often. And it requires a lot of hard work, determination, and of course, most importantly, teamwork. And those are things that are going to apply to you in life as you go on from here. I also want to say about tonight that we are able to recognize the rich history of baseball and softball in Kirkland. I personally hope that we can continue to recognize future accomplishments of both the Kirkland National Little League and the Kirkland American Little League. But I also hope that we can recognize other great achievements by other sports organizations and leagues. Sports are a big part of our culture, And youth sports have a way of building a sense of community and bringing kids and parents together for a common purpose. So I look forward to future celebrations. So thank you, girls, coaches, parents who are here, also representatives of the Kirkland National Little League and the American League. You are welcome back anytime to City Council. You can stay the rest of the meeting if you like, but I'm sure you have better things to do. Wish you much success in the 2017 season.
I'll just introduce all the girls. I guess when I say your name, raise your hand so you can be recognized. Ava Warner, Caden Trolson, Haley Story, Mackenzie Reynolds, Kaya Aldrich, Emma Pascal, Ashlyn Cook, Mia Dill. You want to go by Bella or Isabella? Isabella Ely, Isabella Phillips, Mary Madeline Rowe, Zoe Tarish, hopefully I got that right, Zoe, and Christina Miner. One more, I just want to say thanks to all the girls. They worked really hard, and the parents and all the reps for Little League. We couldn't have did it without you, so thank you. I'll let him introduce his guys.
Good evening. I'm Michael Norman. I had the privilege of managing the junior team. I'd like to take a quick second to thank our district administrators who help us get through this, Bob Toigo and Janice Christensen. Without their help, a lot of this wouldn't happen. I have with me a few of the girls that were on the team last year, and of them, they are all the right age to try again. So we will be trying to make another run at the World Series come June. Mackenzie Burke, Antonia Norman, Claire Longcore, Abby Reynolds, and Casey Gordon.
We could get together to make a little photo here.
Photo? We're ready to coach.
It's a big photo.
They are.
No.
I'm
special.
Great job, girls.
Okay. Let's say softball.
Softball.
Go away, Kirkland.
Congratulations, girls. Good job.
Good job, ladies.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Are you Karen's daughter?
Yes. We're still thinking about it. So we're looking at options.
What? No cake?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
No more sign-ups.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to hear. Yeah.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
You bet.
Onward to 17.
Yeah. No?
Thanks, guys.
you for bringing it to us.
That was fun. I didn't know they were going to bring the World Series. That was great. I hear it just grew. Well, it's nice to see the girls before the game, or before the final team is selected.
I think it's quiet enough yet. We're live.
Okay.
All right, moving on. I want to thank Councilmember Pascal. You have the council's thanks for bringing this forward to us. Sometimes we do work on a lot of things. We forget to celebrate these kinds of activities and successes. So, very nice. Thank you, sir. The next item on our agenda is communications. It's items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. No public hearings are scheduled this evening. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 opponents and 3 proponents may address the council. I do have a sign-in sheet. The first person to have signed in is Lisa McConnell. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Lisa McConnell from the Houghton neighborhood, and I'm going to talk tonight about the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center. There are 2 problems. The first problem, of course, is traffic. You'll hear from Transpo in their analysis that if we do nothing to change the zoning, that the center will grow, and so will trips, and grow significantly. I don't disagree. I also think that we can agree that most of the real problem is the commute through traffic. I agree with a lot of the solutions that Transpo has put forward. They are real solutions to the real problems we already have. In particular, they address the serious safety concerns for pedestrians and vehicles on 68th Street. Transpo's recommendations will also help to slightly improve the extensive delays at the already failing intersection of 68th and 108th. But they do nothing to mitigate or fix the additional problems created by a possible increased density. The second issue is neighborhood scale. 5 stories is too large for our neighborhood center. People who have grown up here and had chosen to stay, or those who have chosen to move here, have say about why Kirkland is it's quiet, it's quaint, it's a small town, and it's not Bellevue. We saw this quite clearly at the For the Love of Kirkland event. The neighborhood community and the neighborhood feel is a big part of why Kirkland. The Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center problems are like getting a puppy. Knowing it will grow, expecting a Labrador, but instead ending up with a giant Neapolitan Mastiff that's somewhat destructive, which you do not have the yard or the resources to deal with. The solution is not to get 5 more puppies. From February's major development project summary on the City of Kirkland planning page, there are 522 housing units under construction, 672 units in permit review, 179 units where zoning is approved, 1,232 units that have zoning under review. This adds up to 2,605 in the pipeline. Add the 2,084 units in pre-review process and the grand total of 4,689 possible units in Kirkland, even if we don't receive a single more development request. From the 2008 update of the Growth Management Act, King County continues to have as its goal, quote, spend money wisely and deliver services efficiently by concentrating infrastructure investments and ensure that necessary transportation facilities and services are available to serve development at the time of occupancy and use. It is obvious that Kirkland needs to decide what is going to be and where it is going to be that. The answer locally as well as regionally is not growth everywhere, but in specific areas that we can support. Meeting infrastructure and density needs is a challenge, especially so with limited funding resources to pay for the extensive solutions and investments we will need to make. I would suggest that the city would be best served to make its true urban areas like the downtown and Totem Lake and their infrastructure work well and prioritize and invest there.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. The next person to have signed in is Jeff Churchill. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor Wallen, members of the council. My name is Jeff Churchill. I'm a board member at Imagine Housing based here in Kirkland. And I'm here tonight on behalf of Imagine Housing to thank you for your support of the Eastside Housing Trust Fund and to ask for your support of the recommendations later on in tonight's agenda. I want to tell you a little bit about what your contributions will accomplish in the coming years. Because of your arts contribution, Imagine Housing will be starting construction on 63 new apartment homes in Bellevue. 31 of those will be for people coming from homelessness or out of shelters into permanent housing. And they'll be open by the end of next year. This project, called 30 Bellevue, will serve people earning below 60% of area median income and will feature on-site supportive services to help residents maintain stability in their housing. In addition, your arts contributions are funding innovation. With $500,000 in pre-development funds, we will continue to make progress on the 257 mixed-income, transit-oriented apartment homes in Estera Park in Overlake Village in Redmond. In addition, that site will feature a YMCA child care center that is open to the whole community. And finally, I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that your prior arts contributions are funding Athene here in Kirkland and Totem Lake, which I'm very excited to say will be opening later this year, 2017. I'm very much looking forward to that. Thank you for your longstanding support, and I'd ask your support of the arch recommendations tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. That's the end of our sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council? If not, I'll declare this items from the audience period closed. The next item on our agenda is the consent calendar. Before I have ask for a motion, I'd like to get the audit of the accounts from Deputy Mayor Arnold, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Since our last meeting, we had payroll in the amount of $3,930,418.88 and bills in the amount of $3,301,076.09.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Comments, corrections? Okay. I'd ask for the roll then, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchioni?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved. The next item on our agenda is under unfinished business. It's item 10A, the 2017 State Legislative Update, number 4. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. So, once again, here to provide your update of what's going on down in Olympia is our Intergovernmental Relations Manager, Lori McKay.
Yeah.
I was a little too quick.
We were.
Much like the legislature acting fast.
Got to put your name in there, hon.
All right. This is me, Schwitzer.
Okay. There you go.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council Members. For the record, I'm Lori McKay, your Government Relations Manager. On the eve of this cutoff for bills being heard in their House of Origin or considered in the House of Origin, Council receiving its fourth update on the legislative priorities for 2017. Up on the screen right now is the session cutoff calendar showing that with tomorrow's deadline to consider bills in the House of Origin, the legislature is halfway through this long 105-day session. And rumors about the need for a special session or sessions continue to float around in the air. So you'll be receiving these exciting updates through April and perhaps beyond. The slide now up on the screen illustrates a summary status of the city's seven legislative priorities. I'll just tick through the current status of each, but I'm going to jump around a little bit. Starting at the bottom of this table, one of the city's priorities is transit-oriented development at the Kingsgate Park and Ride. This priority is not reflected in any proposed legislation, but it was included on the agenda this session to keep it in the forefront of the city's planning and also to continue to prompt staff to reach out to WashDOT and Sound Transit to continue talking about the project. City staff have scheduled a conference call for March 23rd with WashDOT to receive an update from them on the status of this project. The city's four policy priorities around homelessness and affordable housing, lowering the tax limit of MPDs, MPD facilities, updates to the Public Records Act, and replacing the property tax cap. We've been tracking 10 bills related to these priorities. Of the 10 bills, six are very much alive. Three of the six have been passed within their house of origin, including the two bills related to the MPD. Two are currently in rules and in position for a floor vote tonight or tomorrow. And one, the Senate Bill 5254, has been identified as necessary to implement the budget, so it will kind of float around out there and be considered as we move down the second half of the session. One specific update that I need to let you know about is on House Bill 1797 up in the housing priority. That bill only deals with REIT 2. Previous reports, we've talked about it dealing with REIT 2 and REIT 1 flexibility, but it is only dealing with REIT 2 flexibility, and as the city manager likes to remind me, half of something is better than half of nothing, so just wanted to bring you up to date there. And of the three bills that are technically dead, four bills that are technically dead, sorry, the specific issues around two of them are still alive in discussions, and those are exempting non-appointed volunteers from disclosure requests and replacing the property tax cap, which is a kind of a long shot item for budget negotiations at the end. The city's two fiscal priorities, funding for Basic Law Enforcement Academy and funding for the connection between the CKC and the Redmond Central Connector, we'll know more about those priorities at the end of the month when the state's revenue forecast comes out. And then finally, another capital budget issue was recently brought to the attention of staff by Councilmember Pascal and Parks Director Lynn Zwagstra, and that's related to seeking grant funding for the Youth Athletic Facilities Program. It's the program that lets cities and nonprofits renovate and improve existing facilities. The Washington Recreation and Parks Association, WRPA, is requesting the city's support and advocating for $12 million in funding for this program. This specific WRPA legislative priority is on our on the city's 2017 legislative support items agenda, which council adopted at its meeting on January 10th. So in addition to this request, Kirkland has three projects on shown at the bottom of the screen here on WRPA's supplemental grant list, which, if funded with this $12 million request, could receive funding if it's included in the capital budget. So given that this item is on the support agenda of the cities, are there any objections to the mayor sending a letter to members of the city's delegation and to the principal budget negotiators in the state and the House urging support for this funding?
No objections, it looks like, Lori.
Okay,
thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Questions or comments for Ms. McKay? Good job. Thanks for watching out for us.
My pleasure.
The next item on our agenda is under new business. No, I'm sorry, it isn't. It's still unfinished business, 10B. It's a resolution 5246 relating to planning and land use, creating an advisory group of community members to assist in updating the city's housing strategy plan. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we do not have a formal presentation for this since it's fairly straightforward, and the council saw this at the retreat. But we do have Don Nelson, our planning supervisor, is here, as well as Arthur Sullivan, the program manager for ARCH, is here to answer any questions you may have. And one of the things that we are looking for is if there's any missing groups or anything that we didn't capture in the resolution, the way the resolution is set up, you can basically ask us to go solicit for those groups in the future. So we're just recommending approval, but we're here to answer any questions that you have.
Mr. Arnold.
Well, let me kick us off for discussion. Madam Mayor, I'd like to move resolution R5246 relating to planning and land use and creating an advisory group of community members to assist in updating the city's housing strategy plan.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember, or Deputy Mayor Arnold, and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve resolution 5246. Further comments, Mr. Arnold?
Well, from our discussion at the retreat and discussion of the work plan, affordable housing is a priority for this council. It's a big challenge within our city. It was much of the discussion at the Association of Washington Cities Conference, where cities across the state are facing this. So I'm looking forward to having this advisory group come up with some ideas on what we can change to move affordable housing. However, the resolution as written, I wanted to make sure that we're charging this group with thinking bold. And so I have some amendments that I have that set the dais at that end, that I circulated at the dais for you to consider, that will help, I think, make their charge more, be more precise in what we're asking them to do, and make sure that their charge is bold, that we'd like to know just not just what's happening within our comprehensive plan housing strategy, but if there are policy things that we should be doing, if there are budgetary things that we should be doing, if there are things that should be we should be advocating for regionally or at the state level. I'd like to make sure that this group is empowered to think broadly.
Doreen.
I did, and Doreen, I did send this via email to you. This is on page 93 of our packet. I'd like to move what's listed as Amendment 1 in the sheet, which would, I'd move to amend the second whereas clause on line 6 to delete the phrase improving housing opportunities for all residents and insert the following, providing housing for a variety of incomes, ages, and lifestyles.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Nixon to adopt the amendment listed, amendment number 1 on the handout that's before us. I know I'm going to that page as well.
May I make a comment, Madam?
Yes, please. Mayor.
So this language here is specifically out of the goals in the comprehensive plan, and what I'd like the Housing Strategy Advisory Group to make sure that they're looking at is a variety of different types of housing and not just subsidized housing. One of the pieces of feedback I've also received as we were talking about inclusiveness at our last meeting is that part of being an inclusive city is one that all sorts of people should be able to live in.
Makes sense. Other comments? All right. It was moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold. I apologize. Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Nixon to approve Amendment Number 1 so that the whereas clause on line 6 would read, whereas the central goal of the housing element of the comprehensive plan is to preserve neighborhood quality while providing housing for a variety of incomes, ages, and lifestyles. Would all those in favor of that amendment please signify by saying, oh, I'm sorry, we have to do a roll call vote. Yes.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Walling?
Yes. Thank you very much. That amendment is approved. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'd like to move what's listed as Amendment 2 on the sheet, talking about workforce housing issues. I move that we amend a new third whereas clause and a new fourth whereas clause beginning on line 9 to read as follows. Whereas the data from the 2014 American Community Survey shows that 69% of those who work in Kirkland come from outside the city, and 73% of Kirkland's residents with jobs commute to areas outside the city, contributing to regional traffic congestion, and whereas less than 25% of Kirkland employees, including our police officers and firefighters, live in the city of Kirkland.
And?
And.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you.
Second.
It was moved by Councilmember or Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Paschal, to add a third and fourth whereas clause as outlined by Deputy Mayor Arnold. Is there any discussion? All right. Could we have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Paschal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Mr. Arnold?
And then finally, I'd like to amend Section 3 at line 52 to add the phrase on policies, funding, and code changes after City Council and before as outlined. So therefore, Section 3 would be changed to read, the advisory group shall meet multiple times over a month period, March through July, in order to formulate final recommendations to the City Council on policies, funding, and code changes as outlined in the Housing Strategy Plan update schedule, a copy of which is attached here to as Exhibit A.
Jay, do you want to change that to a five-month period?
I think the original actually does say that, so.
Yes. Sorry, that's a typo on our part.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Deputy Mayor Arnold and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to adopt the final amendment as described by Deputy Mayor Arnold and as written on the handout before us with the with this little change of a five-month period, March through July. Any discussion?
Good work.
The roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Paschal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. So the question is on the main motion now. It was moved by Councilmember Arnold, Deputy Mayor Arnold, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to approve Resolution 5246 as amended. Is there any further discussion? Thank you very much. The roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Paschal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Resolution 5246 as amended is approved. Thank you very much for your work on this. Next item on our agenda is under new business. It's item 11A, Resolution 5247, authorizing the city manager to accept a donation of real property from the Hazen Hills Homeowners Association. City manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. I accidentally set up the deputy city manager to put up the wrong slide, so that was my fault. This next item is the acceptance of Hazen Hills, and to make that presentation is Michael Kogel, our deputy director of Parks and Community Services. So my apologies.
Good evening, council members. I'm happy to be before you this evening to propose accepting a donation from the Hazen Hills Homeowners Association for a new park for our community. Hazen Hills Park is a 1.25-acre piece of property located in the Kingsgate neighborhood, and it helps fill an important gap in our park system. As you know, we have a level of service goal in Kirkland of having a park within a quarter-mile walk of every Kirkland household, and this will help us achieve that. Hazen Hills Homeowners Association has gracefully offered to donate the property to the citizens of Kirkland. They are requesting that we retain the name Hazen Hills Park for the property. The City Council did approve maintenance funding in the 17-18 budget for the Parks Department to begin maintenance of this park property. And if the resolution is approved this evening, we anticipate that the city would take over ownership and begin maintenance responsibilities as early as April of this year. Finally, at the bottom of the slide on the screen, a little shout out to Mr. Bob Johnson, representative of the Hazen Hills Homeowners Association, who's been a tremendous advocate and supporter of this project, and definitely want to publicly thank Bob for all his work on this project. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions? Mr. Arnold.
Has the Parks Board made any recommendation?
I'm sorry, has the Parks Board made any recommendation on this acquisition?
Staff did not ask the Park Board to make a formal recommendation on this. We've had continual conversations with the Park Board as we've moved along with this process, and certainly we're involved in the budget development for the department.
Okay. So my only comment, I'm in favor of this acquisition. It's right in the middle of where we want to go. It seems like a very smart, you've done your homework on here. As we look at this in the future, having that there may be other homeowners associations that are looking to do something that doesn't fit as well as this one doing. I would really like to have the Park Board make a explicit recommendation as we look at these future opportunities. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Nixon?
Thank you. Yeah, this is really an exception in many cases for a homeowners association-owned park to be so out in the open. I mean, it literally is right on a major arterial, right on an intersection, completely open to the public, whereas a lot of the homeowner association parks, particularly in Kingsgate but in other areas as well, they're surrounded on all sides by homes and just have narrow paths that go into them and would not be nearly as appropriate as a public park. And so I'm completely supportive of this acquisition and appreciate Hayes and Hills Homeowners Association putting up with the very long time that this has taken to get to the council, because it really has been a long process. But we appreciate the staff's work in making it happen as well.
Would you like to make the motion, sir?
Sure. I move that we... I have to look up the resolution number.
It's 5247.
I move that we approve resolution 5247, authorizing the city manager to accept the donation of real property from the Hazen Hills Homeowners Association.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve resolution 5247. Is there any further discussion? Could you call the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Thank you for the presentation, and thanks for the work on this. The next item on our agenda is item 11B, is resolution 5248, authorizing the city manager to execute a real property purchase and sale agreement for county-owned property near Totem Lake. Mr. Kogel? Returns.
Absolutely, yes. It's a continuation of the theme of parks today. So this is another property that we're acquiring based on our plans and council direction. So here once again is Michael Kogel.
Thank you.
Right. So we're speaking about a piece of property owned by King County near Totem Lake Park on the south side of the East Side Rail Corridor, Cross Kirkland Corridor. This parcel, as shown on the map, is identified in the adopted Totem Lake Park Master Plan. That really helps the city strengthen a connection for those individuals, employees, and business owners that are on Northeast 124th to connect to the Cross Kirkland Corridor, to the park, and then on to the newly developing village at Totem Lake. If approved by the council this evening, this purchase and sale agreement would be moved on to the King County Council, and following their adoption, we would move forward with a due diligence period in which the city would look at the site conditions, environmental site conditions, and particularly doing some soil analysis to make sure we're getting a good piece of property here. The purchase price is $190,000. This is identified in the capital improvement program, and the funding source is the 2012 voter-approved park levy.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mr. Kogel? Mr. Pascal?
It's one of the things that I think we've expressed earlier tonight, and you know that I'm personally interested in is trying to make sure that we're very protective of the parks levy dollars that we have, and that we're using that money in the most productive manner, because it's hard to get this type of money to make purchases of open spaces and things like that. And I want it to last as long as possible. And this parcel, while it can provide a connection in the future, from my understanding and looking at it, it's pretty sizable wetland on it. It's encumbered. It could be used for mitigation for some of our projects.
mitigation for wetland enhancement for some of our capital projects in the area. And so I'm just interested in looking at whether or not in the future we could reimburse our parks levy through other sources. For example, if we did a transportation project and we were able to get grant dollars and that we needed to mitigate something, that we could kind of pay back the parks levy through other sources, because that money just is hard to come by, whereas there's other grant opportunities for capital projects that are more, I think, easier to get out there. So this is something that I would like staff to consider as we, if we agree with this purchase tonight.
Maybe we can send that to the Absolutely. Parks, Public Works Committee, if the council's okay with that. Mm-hmm. Great. I think that's a really interesting idea. Thank you.
So we got a resolution yet?
I need a resolution or a motion, please, to approve.
I will move resolution R5248, authorizing the city manager to execute a real property purchase and sale agreement for county-owned property near Totem Lake.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Sweet, seconded by Councilmember Marchione, to approve resolution 5248. Is there any further discussion? All right. The roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. I'm so excited to see investments in Totem Lake being made a reality. Thank you for your work on this.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Deputy Mayor Arnold, for pointing out that we should make this a priority. And it's just really exciting to see it all coming together. So I appreciate everyone on that. The next item on our agenda is also new business. It's 11C, an ordinance 4563 relating to disorderly conduct and amending Kirkland Municipal Code 11.84A.030. City Manager.
Okay, thank you. And now the disorderly conduct amendment. So thank you, Marilyn, for putting it up again. So here to give you a brief presentation on this issue and answer any questions is our City Attorney, Kevin Raymond.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. This proposed ordinance relates to Kirkland Municipal Code Section 11.84A.030, subsection 3 of which identifies as disorderly conduct instances where an individual intentionally conducts him or herself in a manner which disturbs the public peace, provokes disorder, or endangers the safety of others. Last summer, on appeal from a jury trial in Kirkland Municipal Court, King County Superior Court Judge Mack on an appeal under the rules for appeal from courts of limited jurisdiction ruled that subsection 3 was unconstitutional under the First Amendment on what are called vagueness and overbreadth grounds. And the basis for that ruling was that indicating that an individual may not conduct him or herself intentionally in ways that disturb the public peace could capture instances of conduct that themselves constitute protected speech. Pure conduct does not enjoy First Amendment protections, but there are some instances of conduct that are considered expressive and enjoy free speech protections. One of the most helpful examples that I've seen in a case involves the honking of horns, and the court distinguished between the honking of horns as a matter of road rage from an instance where, for example, an individual is honking a horn in response to a sign that said, you know, honk if you support our troops. And so Judge Mack ruled that because intentionally conducts itself without more particulars could capture instances of free speech protected conduct, that the provision was unconstitutional. So since that ruling, we have been working to come up with a new and better standard that would cure the defect that Judge Mack identified. One of the things that we tried for quite some time to do was to come up with a code definition that would help police officers in the field differentiate between conduct that was pure conduct and unprotected and conduct that was expressive and therefore protected. And, for example, we tried to craft language that would say protected or protected conduct is conduct which can clearly be understood in the context in which it was made, and decided ultimately that that was really asking too much of police officers in the field. And so what we did instead was suggested three specific instances of pure conduct that are routinely included in municipal ordinances that do not enjoy free speech protection. One of them is the disruption of lawful gatherings of people, and the second is the obstruction of vehicular and pedestrian traffic, and the third is what, since 1942, after a United States Supreme Court case called Chaplinsky versus New Hampshire, has been identified as fighting words. And it's fighting words has been around for a long time, but what it means is, defined by the United States Supreme Court, is words which by their very utterance inflict injury or tend to incite an immediate breach of the peace. I've been working with staff, and in particular the Chief Harris, on this approach. We have worked with the Kirkland prosecuting attorney as well, and believe that this approach, three new instances of pure conduct that are widely recognized as constituting disorderly conduct, together with other available citation remedies for things such as violations of our noise code, trespass, assault, and harassment, would address the foreseeable instances of disorderly conduct that our police officers might be asked to respond to. So that's the presentation. That's the approach that we've recommended, and the chief and I would be very happy to answer any questions the council may have.
Well, before we start talking about this, I did want to advise that I was contacted by Ms. B. Neon. Many of us know her, with a concern about this ordinance, that she's concerned about hate speech, and she was concerned about, I think, what is a kind of a term of art, the fighting words, mm-hmm. And that what will last, so it's very well described in the memo, but not so well described in the ordinance. So her concern was that the ordinance should contain more detail about what we are actually talking about. So I asked, I expressed my concern to the city attorney. He prepared an alternate or what would be an amendment to this ordinance. And I'm not as well organized as our deputy mayor. I don't have a printed copy for you, but I did email it to you. And so I just want to point out that that's sort of the process we got to, that there is a proposed amendment to not use the term fighting words, but rather words by which their very utterance inflict injury or tend to incite an immediate breach of the peace. So I'm not sure if the council's ready to make a motion on this ordinance and then amend it, or if we need to talk about this a little bit more or ask questions of our city attorney if this is the approach that he would be comfortable with our police chief. Would she be comfortable with this? Yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, I would be interested in hearing the city attorney's comments on, basically, you're suggesting replace fighting words with the actual definition in the ordinance.
Yeah, thank you. And in response to you Councilmember Pascal and Mayor Wallet, I would be very comfortable with that. It's easy for me, after all these years, to think I know what fighting words means and believe I do and assume that everyone else does, and it's not necessarily clear to somebody that's not a lawyer. And so I think that using striking fighting words and using the phrase that the United States Supreme Court has said fighting words means makes sense. I would be very supportive of that change.
Yes, Ms. Sweet and Mr. Arnold.
My question would be for the chief. Do you feel like that is tight enough for officers to be able to respond to consistently?
So I have not seen the definition. I have just heard it. I believe that officers understand fighting words because they get there and there's mutual combat. And so I do believe that they understand it. but from what my memory serves of that very short reading of that definition, that sounds like that would be just
really
as good.
I really apologize. I should have sent you this.
No, that's honestly, Mayor, that one's on me. I should have shared that with the chief.
I'm forwarding it to you right now.
But I did take the phrase right out of Chaplinsky.
Okay.
The Supreme Court case.
Mr. Arnold.
Oh, modern technology.
Given that comment from the chief, I'm reconsidering whether I want to move to take action on this tonight. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if there might be, because part of the goal here is to not only provide clarity given feedback from the court, but also clarity to our officers. And I'm wondering if there is a way that, since fighting words may be a term that is well understood, that these two changes could be, or that both references could be merged, and to have more of a robust review and feedback from the police department. So, yes.
Madam Mayor.
Oh, yes. Ms. Harris.
So, modern technology, I now have it right in front of me. And it actually would be very clear to a police officer, and it's what we see.
I have a question for you about fighting words in general. There's if someone were to say there was an incident in Kent recently, and it was much more than words, but if someone were to say, go back to where you come from, to, you know, a person who's obviously from another country, could that be considered fighting words, do you think? Sorry to surprise you with this question, but I was thinking about it this afternoon.
I think it could. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the U.S. Supreme Court and our Washington Supreme Court have both said about fighting words is that that the context is important. Mm-hmm. And so the times is important, the issues are important, the actual words are important. And in addition, the reaction of an individual may not be as relevant as what the reaction of a reasonable person would be. So the same words to a very fragile person might not constitute fighting words unless they would have that same impact, actual hurt, an actual provocation of violence on a reasonable, you know, so-called reasonable person standard basis. So short answer to your question is yes, it could. It would be contextual.
Well, the concern that was raised to me was about hate speech, so I wanted to make sure that we address that. And I think it's always our goal to give our police department every tool that they need to do their jobs. And I think that this does that. But on the other hand, as I don't think it's urgent that we adopt this tonight if members are not comfortable proceeding. Ms. Sweet?
I just Googled fighting words. And my word, there's all kinds of stuff in here.
You learn it in law school. It's a thing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, so I think I, too, am more than willing to just have this get one more review before we embrace it, particularly in the context of the work we've been doing on inclusion and making sure, particularly ethnically, whether there are both fighting words and fighting behaviors that can be interpreted differently. I don't know if that's going to bias anything, but I'm not in a hurry.
What's your suggestion, Public Safety Committee, or members bring up concerns with the city attorney individually?
We have brought this issue to the Public Safety Committee, but the emphasis has shifted since we did mm-hmm. that. At the time, we were trying to define conduct in a way that would be helpful to officers in the field, and now we're recommending specific instances. I want to mention another reason why time is not our enemy is that on appeal from a court of limited jurisdiction, the Superior Court's ruling has precedential value only as it relates to that particular case. The reason that we dropped the appeal and pursued a recommendation of a switch is we could see the issue coming up again. But it's not as if this provision can't be used, although I don't think it is being used right now because of the vagueness and overbreadth issues. So certainly if the council wishes to spend, you know, take more time and get more comfortable with an approach, whatever that may be, is certainly fine.
Suggestion, Mr. Triplett?
Yeah, so I guess my suggestion, though, would be to send individual suggestions or comments to the city attorney, and then we'll see if they rise to the level that we should bring them back to a committee, or they, you know, the two that we've heard here, I think, are ones that we can adjust for the next council meeting, but there may be others that come up. So my suggestion would be to ask people to please contact the city attorney if you have additional comments or suggestions.
And in one last comment, and responding to Council Member Sweet, I mean, this case was decided in 1942, so it's not surprising to me that you would come up with a ton of stuff on Google. And there have been, you know, probably hundreds of cases across the country on this issue since then. My recommendation, and I'll bring it back next time you're ready to consider it, would be to just use the language from the Supreme Court decision, even though there's lots of other language out there.
Thank you. Mr. Nixon.
Thank you. And in your analysis that you're going to bring back to us, I'd very much like to understand more about this concept of hate speech. Because my understanding of Washington State's hate crime law is that it's not an independent crime, right? It's a sentencing enhancement that applies once the elements of some other crime are met. And I'd like to understand whether this disorderly conduct ordinance or code would be one of those precedent crimes to be considered to be a hate crime if it was proven that the motivation of the disorderly conduct was hate, or whether the state law on hate crimes applies only to certain specific precedent crimes.
Okay.
So if you could let us know that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah. No, I will do that, Mr. Nixon. Thank you.
All right. Council members will... Oh, Mr. Arnold, I'm sorry.
One more question. The original goal here seemed to be to clarify our municipal code on this. But there was an addition of intentionally obstructs vehicle or pedestrian traffic as a specific addition. And I just wanted to have some discussion of why that was added as new. Is that not covered elsewhere in the code?
It's a very good question. In working with the chief and with the Kirkland prosecutors, once we came to the conclusion that describing what protected conduct is would be too difficult to administer in the field, we asked ourselves what types of disorderly conduct that are widely recognized as such aren't currently included in our code. And we reviewed the ordinances of a number of other jurisdictions, including Seattle and Kenmore and Burien and Renton. And we identified three areas that we felt weren't otherwise covered by our code, and that had been subsumed in the general description of disorderly conduct, but would benefit from clarity. And those were the three.
Thank you.
All right, so council members will be in touch with you, and we'll look forward at the next meeting.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is item 11D. It's planning and building staffing. City manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Next up is our planning director, Eric Shields, who's going to discuss briefly our plan to try to provide additional capacity for both long-range planning and current planning. Very short, one slide, and really here to answer questions if you have any. And we would be looking for a motion to approve.
Thank you. Tonight we're requesting that the council approve a couple of changes to our staffing. One is to add a new 1.0 FTE senior planner that would be funded essentially from a retiring half-time senior planner position and a 0.5 urban forester position that's in the budget. So this is not additional staffing overall, but it is kind of realigning to meet what we believe are the needs for our planning work program. And we would like to proceed with hiring on that soon, even before Teresa Swan, who's the retiring senior planner, retires in a couple of months, so that we can have some overlap with her and some training. Secondly, we also have been kind of put on notice by the AFSCME union that the contract urban or the arborist that we've been using to support our development review function, that really, per, I think, the union contract, ought to be brought under in-house. So we're proposing a new 1.0 FTE development review arborist that would be funded from development fee revenue and some reserves that are available for that use right now.
Questions from us? Yes, Mr. Basco.
Yeah, thanks for bringing this to us. Just a question on the FTE for the senior planner. Are we saying that's definitely being focused on long-term planning or not current
yes.
planning?
Yes, no, that's absolutely correct. Okay. That's a long-range planning.
Long-range planning.
Yes, yeah. I should have clarified that.
Okay.
Yes.
Mr. Arnold.
Well, thank you for bringing this forward. I think what we'll see as we look at the planning work program at upcoming council meetings is a lot more of what we've seen in the past, given that current planning as in permit review, given all the growth, has been resources have been grabbed for that to the cost of long-range planning, and that we have a lot of long-range planning that as a council we're interested in doing. And so I think both in solving the current planning processing issues and adding resources, we'll get to where we want to go. I think this is a good proposal. And I think as we grow, we're going to see more of this as we have contract positions over time, supported by the level of development activity, become temporary full-time and then potentially full-time positions. I think we'll see this more and more as we grow. Thank you.
Thank you. So our staff is seeking a motion to confirm the addition. Would you like to?
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'll move that we confirm hiring of the one FTE senior planner and one FTE development review arborist.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Pascal, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to confirm the addition of a new full-time senior planner and a new temporary full-time development review arborist, both funded as proposed by staff. Discussion? Could you call the roll, please, Ms. Anderson?
Councilmember Nixon.
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal.
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione.
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet.
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold.
Yes.
Mayor Wallen.
Yes. Thank you very much. That resolution is approved. The next item on our agenda is item 11E. It's the Board and Commission Recruitment Interview Selection Committee's recommendation. City Manager.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, again, no formal presentation here. This was a presentation to the full council by the subcommittee at the last council meeting, and we're just looking to see whether you want to affirm their recommendation or if there's any proposed changes that the council wants to make for who you interview and how you interview them.
Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, I do have one proposed change. I noted that for the Salary Commission, the subcommittee recommended interviewing only one person who's the incumbent, but there was a second person who applied, and we often want to have an alternate, and so I would like to add to the recommendation that we also interview Chris Moody for Salary Commission. Do I need to do that as a motion?
I think.
Or do we need to have a motion to approve the recommendation first? Okay, so first I will move that we approve the recommendation of the subcommittee on board and commission interviews.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Sweet to adopt the recommendations of the council's board and commission interview selection committee.
And so now I'd like to move to amend the recommendation to add Chris Moody to also be interviewed for Salary Commission.
Second.
Thank you. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to amend the motion to add Chris Moody to be interviewed for the Salary Commission. Is there any discussion? Could we vote on the amendment first, please? Ms. Anderson, the roll.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. Now we're on to the main motion to approve the adopt the recommendations of the Board and Commission Interview Selection Committee. It was moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Sweet, and I should have said as amended. So if we could call the roll, please, on that.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Pascal?
Yes.
Councilmember Marchione?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. And Ms. Anderson, could you remind us who the interview selection committee members were?
Yes.
Or maybe Deputy Mayor Arnold will remember.
It was myself and Councilmember Marchione and
Councilmember Pascal.
Councilmember Pascal.
Thank you very much for your service, Interview Selection Committee.
Yes.
We appreciate it. The next item on our agenda is reports, and I think we can get this done without a break. I think we can. We can do this. Okay. Mr. Nixon, would you like to kick us off?
Although I do have one that is a little bit long, but
okay.
We'll get through it. Okay, so nothing to report from past things. So future things, the Sound Cities Association Public Issues Committee meeting is tomorrow. The only thing we're voting on is filling a couple of vacancies in regional boards and commissions. We'll just go along with what the nominating committee suggests. There are two items for discussion. One is the PSRC Regional Economic Strategy. I don't have much to say about that. It's kind of an ongoing thing. The thing that will be, I think, have a healthy discussion is the proposed cultural access sales tax, which is would be a tenth of a percent sales tax countywide to provide funding for increasing the access to all kinds of cultural opportunities in the area. If approved by the county council by June, it would go on the August ballot. That's what they're talking about. And it would raise $67 million a year projected in 2018. So it's significant. 10% would go to public school cultural access. And when I inquired about that, that's a lot of buses. Mm-hmm. They want to pay for the kids to be able to get to the opportunities, and the school districts can't afford the bus transportation. 70% would go to regional cultural organizations. I don't believe we have any qualifying regional cultural organizations in Kirkland. I might be wrong.
We actually do. I'm sorry, just to go. We actually have two.
Oh, do we?
Which are important for our support. One is the Kirkland Performance Center, and the other is the Studio East Theater Program. Mm.
Excellent. Thank you. I'm happy you mentioned that. And then the 20% for other community-based, smaller cultural organizations. This will be discussed tomorrow night, and I'll bring back my report from that discussion. But I also wanted to suggest that we may consider for a future council meeting having a presentation done on this because I think at some point in the summer we will be asked to do a resolution supporting it. So just to consider that for future calendaring.
Question, what's it a tax on?
It's a sales tax. It's another 0.1% sales tax.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Last thing I want to mention is that this coming weekend is the legislative town hall meetings. The 48th district legislators are having theirs at 10:30 a.m. on Saturday at Redmond City Hall. The 45th district legislators have their town hall meeting. Well, at least. Representative Goodman and Representative Springer. I didn't see the Senator Rossi's joining them. It's at noon on Saturday at Lake Washington Institute of Technology. And then the first legislative district legislators, all three of them, are doing their town hall on Sunday afternoon at 2:30 at the University of Washington in Bothell.
Great.
Thank you.
Mr. Pascal. Yeah.
Thank you. Let me see. I had a couple things I wanted to share. The other week I got to spend a day with the firefighters at Fire Station 27, and that was a very memorable experience, I would say. Got to talk with them a lot and heard a lot of discussion about just the challenges that they're thinking about and facing related to our growth and our population and the changing of how houses are built and bigger buildings and things like that. And then also a lot of interest in the fire station. So heard a lot of ideas on that. Second item was I attended the Juanita High School open house. Learned that they'll be starting construction this summer and they'll be finished by 2020, which would be a year earlier than they had originally planned as part of the bond. So that's good. My daughter starts here in 2020, so I'm happy for her, but I feel bad for the kids that have to go through 3 years of construction. Also attended the Welcome to Juanita event along with Deputy Mayor Arnold, and that was I wish I hadn't had lunch before I attended because they had some wonderful food, and next time I'll know that to come hungry. But I would ask that as we're talking about next steps with our safe and inclusive cities that we reach out to those organizers because I think they have a lot of contacts with the community and different ethnicities. Finally, I attended the Housing Development Consortium today. I don't know if did anyone else attend that from Kirkland? Okay. Really good event, very inspirational. There's a couple factoids I like to kind of walkaways. They said that over the next 10 years, this region, King County, is dedicating about $1 billion towards affordable housing, which that struck me. I didn't realize it was that much. And then they also talked about homelessness and that every $100 increase in the median monthly rent results in a 39% increase in homelessness. So pretty big. That struck me as just a huge, huge number. So, thank you.
It is a huge number. Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
Okay. Cascade Water Board, we had our monthly meeting, and we are moving forward with still poking at PSC about energy generation. Nothing is firm yet, but we're still checking everything out, bringing people, experts in to give us the best advice possible. We also came up with some rules with regard to reclaimed water on how we're going to charge user cities. Both Redmond and Kirkland have a program where we're actually drawing it out of a tank, I guess, down on Willows or off Willows. Is that where it is, Kathy?
It's off Northeast 124th down in the valley near Willows Road.
Okay. Anyway, so we have a system whereby we're fairly treating the other participants in the Cascade Water Alliance in terms of how we account for the reclaimed water. Also, with regard to water, the regional water quality meeting this month had an extensive review of the failed wastewater over in what's it called?
West Point.
West Point. And I've got a report if anybody is interested in seeing it. It really is fascinating and frustrating, and it's as if a tsunami hit the thing. It really is. It's incredible. So just let me know if you want me to share that report with you. EDC annual investor meeting was last week. Best part is always the economic forecast. He's always so up, and he was up again, and everything's going to be wonderful. So till the next quarterly meeting, we'll see what happens. Then Amy and I went to the SCA caucus chair training, where Ann McFarland gave us a kind of a fun course on Jurassic Parliament, a little different than what I've had before, and it was a lot of fun.
And I finally learned how to deal with a point of order.
Yes, she
next
did.
Time you do one, I'm going to know how to do it. I'm excited.
Yeah. And then on Friday, I was able to go. Friday, that was fun. KDA meeting. So I did finally go to the KDA meeting, and they want to know what we're going to do with their survey that they sent us about the plastic bag ban response. So I guess I'm going to suggest that we better turn it over to some. Did we get a petition or a response? I can't remember.
I think they sent us a letter with the survey results.
Okay.
So I will double check that. But
I think they're thinking we're going to come to some conclusions that are going to change a lot of things. So can I suggest it go to the Planning and Economic Development Committee?
Has it gone there previously, or has it gone to Public Works? For the big plastic bags.
That's where it came from originally.
It came from Public Works originally.
So Public Works?
Yay.
Okay with that?
Sure.
And then the other thing we talked about at the KDA meeting is we talked about the sign changes that are coming. So I left a very happy group of people down there. Rob Barr just spent $500 on a new sign to put in front of their building. Anyway, I warned them that sign changes were coming, that we were going to start putting notices on signs so people would know where they were inappropriate, and that at some point in time, soon, things would be different.
Are we doing that? Are we putting notices on signs?
Well, we're evaluating how to do that, and then we're going to be coming back to the council for further
direction.
I'm
excited to have you come back to us.
And if I could just I think this will be a good topic when we deal with the planning work program, and I really didn't want to go ahead putting the notices on signs until we have that conversation with the full council. So
I'm happy.
Yeah. And that's fine. I just I wanted to warn them.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
I just don't want anybody else buying signs.
Yeah, good. Thank you.
And I noticed that there's a church that operates in the Lake Washington School District.
Yes.
They put their signs out. I mean, it's just there's a lot of impacted organizations.
Okay, and then just two other things, if I may. I could put them at the end, but I'll do this first. We got an invitation, a call for proposals for the NLC, and I really think it's time, and I think that probably Mr. Lopez has got most of the stuff that would be necessary, but I think that we should submit our health care plan for NLC consideration for submission at their next conference. I don't know what you guys think, but I'm proud enough of it to do it.
I'm very proud of it, and it's groundbreaking work, and it deserves national recognition.
Right, and we could have pictures of Kurt and Heather before and after.
That's true. Absolutely.
Anyway, and one more thing. Kathy Lambert and I had a conversation. She is now going to be the chair of the regional water quality meeting. So we're going to actually re-up the conversation about CSOs. Gonna love that. But she is requesting a letter in support of waste to energy. And what I told her was I have been to one of the waste to energy forums. I was unable to attend one that she had last week with a bunch of folks from Florida. But what I told her was I was going to review that online and then meet with Kathy and Kurt to see if there's some recommendation they might want to make to us with regard to, I don't know, taking a position or whatever. Is that workable for folks?
Works for me.
Okay.
Matt, out of small, right? I think that would probably, in addition to us meeting with you, that might be something you want to take to some committees as well, it's quite a complicated topic and needs a little bit of background, I think, for folks.
Which is absolutely fine with me because it's, unfortunately, I sit on MISWAC and SWAC now, and the chair of SWAC is pretty profoundly in dispute with the whole concept as a clean option. Mm-hmm. So I'm in kind of a tricky position, but I explained that to Kathy yesterday and told her how I was going to proceed so we can have some more discussion before we get it back to all committees, or
it could be a short presentation of the full council if the council prefer, or we could do it in different committees, whichever you have a preference for.
What would you
think? You run it through a couple committees, don't you? That seems to work pretty well.
That's
fine. Have a fuller discussion if it's in a committee, I think.
Yep.
Council.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Mr. Arnold.
So on Thursday, March 2nd, I went to the FutureWise breakfast. The mayor was there, as well as former mayors and city managers, talking a lot about inclusiveness and equity as we grow. And it was always a very inspiring presentation. Kind of following up on that, I will send a presentation around from the Growth Management Policy Board on public health. And the chair of the Pierce County Public Health Board, Dr. Chu, did a presentation at the policy board on planning for health, and basically came down to this, that 55% of health incomes are based on social economic factors, and what we do within our planning impacts that. We're still seeing the impacts today from redlining that happened 50 years ago. And it's a very fascinating presentation. I'll circulate for the whole council.
Is it health outcomes?
Yes.
Okay.
Finally, actually, that was that same day. It was a
busy day. I attended the grand opening of the Rubicon Float Studio at Juanita Village. They have a dozen float tanks, and it's really an interesting concept, and the engineering behind them. Got to see the behind-the-scenes tour. It's very, very interesting. I can't wait to try it out sometime. Thank you.
Thank you. So I did a Green Kirkland event, and I think that we should maybe as a council go do a Green Kirkland event. Bring our mud boots and our shovels and dig out a few blackberries.
Could it get a little warmer?
It's maybe when it's a little warmer. It is very incredible what they've accomplished. If you, you know, take a tour with Nona and just what they've done is amazing. And then I think also Councilmember Sweet and maybe others did the readathon at John Muir.
Oh, that was fun.
Which was great.
Depressing books, though.
Oh, it was a sad book, wasn't it?
Mine was sad, too.
Mine was sad. It was about a kid being left out. Anyway, it was a good conversation with them. And then I was, as a part of Sound Cities, had lunch with Mayor Murray this week, and he would like to partner with other cities in King County to talk about affordable housing and best practices and how can all of the cities get on the same page. And he's seems to really want to work with us. And so I thought that was an interesting idea and something I would hope that we could be supportive of. So that is my report, and now it is time to hear from our city manager.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple quick topics.
First, as I've had a chance to talk to you all about...
There we go. A couple quick topics. As we had a chance to talk about, as you know, our emergency manager, Patty Jean Hooper, his last day was February 17th. We'd sent out a couple announcements through an email to the organization, but I want to make sure the council knew that Deputy Chief Helen Aarons Byington has taken over as the emergency manager with other duties as well. As some of you know, she was our previous emergency manager. That was part of her role before we had the dedicated position. So I just want to express our appreciation for her willingness to step up and take on the job. One of her first tasks is to hire the emergency coordinator. Aaron Tramontosi, who had that role, actually got accepted into the Foreign Service. And so she's heading off to D.C. now. And but so we are accelerating, restaffing that very quickly, and you'll start to see communications from Helen. But for the whole organization, she's now acting as the emergency manager as well as other deputy chief duties. So I just want to see if anyone had any questions on that before I move on to the
questions. Ms. Sweet.
I just want to say, Joe, I really thought that was a nice memo that you sent out explaining the changes in emergency management. I think it gave the right level of importance and sort of the approach that we need to take to get the work done. And I suspect people will respond well to it. And I'm personally really happy to have Helen back. Not that Patty Jean was a problem, but I've always enjoyed working with Helen on the emergency management stuff.
Thank you. Just as an aside, for our next management retreat, which is all of the managers and supervisors and directors, emergency management is going to be the focus of that retreat. And so we're going to be reintroducing some of the concepts, and Helen will be having a major role in that. So really trying to elevate that, you know, getting prepared again in the organization. So secondly, just wanted to highlight, I'll be coming back. It's not yet calendared, but I'll be returning with some funding options for some of the work program elements that you suggested, as well as some options for the feasibility of the Peter Kirk Park. You had asked for some options, so I'll probably be bringing that back to the first meeting in April. So stay tuned. A few questions have been asked about that, and that will be coming, but it's not yet on the calendar. So, but other than that, is there any other calendar suggestions from the council that you'd like us to add?
I see none.
Okay, so that's my report, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. So it is before 10 o'clock, so this is an additional time on our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. So it's an additional items from the audience period. So if anyone would like to address the council, this would be your opportunity. Is there anyone who wishes to come and speak to us? I'll declare this items from the audience period closed, and thank you all very much. We are now adjourned. Good evening.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you.
Bye, Doreen.